add up the pennies and the pounds will take care of themselves, my granny used to say. This year, consider giving Rabble.ca a few pennies. You can donate at rabble.ca/donate. You'll feel good and you'll feel even better when your name is entered in our prize draw. You could win an iPad. Rabble.ca/donate. It's a small price to pay to make a big difference.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Good morning. So as Dale mentioned, I represent a number of the Iraq war resistors who are seeking immigration status in Canada, including Ashley Brockway and Dale to my left. And I've been asked by the War Resistor Support Campaign to provide you with sort of a general overview of the present legal landscape for these cases. And to provide you with some of the context for Ashley's story, which you'll be hearing shortly. But instead of talking about what they've asked me to talk about, I want to get across a particular message to you folks today. And that is, I want to thank you all for coming out to show your support for the Iraq War Resistors. And I want you to know that I believe it's incredibly important that we continue to actively engage on this issue, and in particular to continue with letter-writing campaigns, rallies, requesting meetings with MPs, etc., to try and force our political representatives to actively engage in a dialogue on this issue. And this is important because, although I think it's been about a year since a war resistor has been given a deportation order, and I think the last was Rodney Watson, who's currently in sanctuary in BC, although it seems like it's quiet on that front, the government is actively and adamantly still opposing these cases in ways that might fall under the radar to people who aren't lawyers. And so I want to talk to you a bit about some of the things that the government is doing to push back against the popular support that the Iraq War Resistors are receiving to stay in Canada. In particular, I want to talk about two examples. The first being Operational Bulletin 202. Now, some of you might have heard about this. In July of this year, the government released an operational bulletin. And basically what that is its headquarters at Citizenship and Immigration Canada providing direction to any and all immigration officers who are deciding applications. And this particular bulletin singles out U.S. Servicemen and women who might be absent from their unit and says that they are potentially criminally inadmissible to Canada. And the reason this is important is, well, first of all, it's extremely unusual for Citizenship and Immigration Canada to single out a particular and identifiable group and to direct immigration officers that they might be criminally inadmissible to Canada. Usually that's an individual decision that's made by an officer after an assessment of the situation, and sometimes you can even get an exemption from inadmissibility, etc. But no, in the case of the Iraq War Resistors, the headquarters at Citizenship and Immigration Canada has said, take all of your Iraq War Resistor files, send them to headquarters to get direction, and then look at criminal inadmissibility. So, interestingly enough, this direct operational bulletin came out shortly after the Federal Court of Appeal released its decision in Jeremy Hinsman's case. And in that decision, the Federal Court of Appeal said, basically, you're not doing a good enough job assessing the humanitarian and compassionate issues that are present in these cases. In particular, your immigration officers are not looking at the beliefs of these men and women and why they're in Canada in the first place. You're not engaging with that. And so they've said that Jeremy's humanitarian and compassionate application has to be sent back. And in response, the government has said, okay, well, fine, if we have to do that, we're directing all immigration officers to find that these people might be criminally inadmissible to Canada. And not to bore you with too many legal details, but the way a sponsorship application or a humanitarian and compassionate grounds application works is there are two stages to the decision making. The first stage is when you say, yes, there are humanitarian and compassionate factors here, somebody should be allowed to stay on that basis. And then the second stage is criminal, medical, and financial admissibility. So basically what the government has done is said, even if we win on this first front, we're not going to accept it. We're directing officers to find that they're criminally inadmissible to Canada. So they're fighting back in a very real way on with this bulletin. It's going to impact humanitarian compassionate grounds applications, sponsorship applications, and when the government actually acts on this bulletin, it will impact a number of the war resisters' cases. Now, they still haven't actually provided me or anybody with their case on criminal inadmissibility, but it's definitely an unusual, unprecedented step that the government has taken to single out a particular group, order officers to send these files to headquarters for special consideration. So that's one way that the government is, in a very real way, pushing back against these cases. A second example that I want to give you concerns the case of Dean Walcott. We were in federal court this past December arguing the judicial review of a humanitarian and compassionate application and a pre-removal risk assessment application in Dean Walcott's case. Now, recently, over the past couple of years, we've had some fairly substantial legal successes, in particular the Court of Appeals decision in Jeremy Hinsman's case and the decision of the federal court in Kim Rivera's case. In the Rivera case, the court said there's ample evidence that people who are outspoken critics of the war in Iraq are specifically targeted by the U.S. military when they're sent back for more severe treatment. And the court said, you've got to look at that issue, and you're not doing that. In Jeremy Hinsman's case, the Court of Appeal, as I already said you have to look at these resistors' beliefs, and you have to consider that, you know, their beliefs are important, they're protected under international law that's binding on Canada, so we have to look at those when assessing their applications. Now, Dean received a humanitarian and compassionate grounds application decision and a PRA decision at approximately the same time that Jeremy and Kim received their decisions. And in fact, Dean's decisions were a cut and paste, almost word for word, exactly the same as those in Kim and Jeremy's case. When we were in court in December, I actually highlighted the portions of the decision that were the same and gave it to the judge just so he got a clear view of how exactly they are the same. And the page was yellow, right? Because it really is a cut and paste. And so I would have personally expected that the government might have consented and not pursued the judicial review application to court, since the court has already said in Kim and Jeremy's cases that those decisions were unreasonable and they're not taking into consideration all of the factors that they have to. But instead, the Department of Justice pursued this to court with a team of lawyers. So it was me on one side and there's an army of Department of Justice lawyers on the other side. Basically trying to overturn the successes that we have received from the Court of Appeal and the federal court in Jeremy and in Kim's cases. And I think it's important that we pay attention to what they're actually saying in their arguments. For example, the government tried to distinguish Jeremy's beliefs from Dean's beliefs. And they said basically, okay, fine, the Court of Appeal says that you have to consider Jeremy's beliefs because they're in part based on religion. But Dean's beliefs, because they're not based on religion, they're based on moral and political objections, we don't have to consider those. And the government lawyer actually said that Dean is just objecting to the logistics of the war, the placement of troops here, the placement of troops there, you know, this played on a tank there, this played on a tank there, and that this doesn't have to receive the same respect as Jeremy's views that are in part based on religion. And actually, the government lawyer gave what I thought was a pretty offensive analogy. And he said that Dean's situation, and I'll just let you know, if you don't know Dean's situation, he served two full tours in Iraq, went back to the States and was training young Marines to go over to Iraq. And he said, I want no part in this anymore. I can't do it, right? So he saw what was happening in Iraq, and it was what was actually happening in Iraq that he objected to. But the government lawyer stood up before the court and said his situation is equivalent to somebody who wants to smoke pot, but they don't qualify for medical marijuana exemption. And so they smoke pot anyways, and they get arrested. And then they say, you're infringing on my, I think the exact words were, freedom of substance expression. So this was how the government was comparing Dean's objections to, and what he personally objected to, and he describes this in detail in his affidavits before the court, of witnessing young Iraqi children being mistreated by American and British troops, right? So I got up in front of the court and I complained that was not a fair analogy and that Dean's beliefs are just as much protected by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and freedom of thought, conscience, and religion as Jeremy's are. And we haven't received that decision yet, but I think it's important that we acknowledge that they've taken quite an offensive take on Dean's moral stance against the egregious human rights violations that are occurring in Iraq. So the government is, under the radar, using Dean's case and measures such as Operational Bulletin 202 to push back, to call resistors criminals, and to say that the majority of their views don't need to be respected or considered. And I don't think that we should let them get away with that. It's the efforts of members of the campaign, supporters such as yourselves, through writing letters, asking for meetings with MPs, that keep this issue on the radar. And it's very important that we continue to do that. So thank you for your support, and please do continue to come out. I want to give you one more example of why it's important, I think, to continue to actively engage and not just sort of be a supporter within yourself, but tell other people that you're supporting and get a dialogue going. And that's the circumstances of Ashley Brockway and her husband, Jeremy Brockway. And in my opinion, the legal system in our country has failed them to date. And so we need other ways of helping this family out. You're going to hear more about their case momentarily, but just in brief, I'll tell you that Jeremy is basically Ashley's husband, who's not here with us, because he's basically incapacitated by post-combat, post-traumatic stress disorder because of what he witnessed when he was on the ground in Iraq. He attempted to get a medical discharge from the Marine Corps, but this was denied, so the Marine Corps found that he was still eligible to be deployed to Iraq despite clearly being unable to fulfill his duties. And so we argued before the Immigration and Refugee Board that the system in the U.S. failed him. He's undeployable, but yet the U.S. system said that he could be deployed. But the member of the Immigration and Refugee Board, Mr. Ken Atkinson, who I know was formerly a progressive conservative member of Parliament for St. Catharines in the early 90s before he was appointed to the Refugee Board. Anyways, he was the member who decided Jeremy and Ashley's case. And Mr. Atkinson found that Jeremy had already been provided with sufficient protection in the United States. It didn't matter that Jeremy was going to be redeployed in his state. It didn't matter that he was incapacitated by post-traumatic stress disorder, and would certainly suffer further psychological harm, possibly irreparably so, if sent back to a combat zone. It didn't matter that the Marine Corps Medical Board made the wrong decision. It didn't matter because he had access to the medical board, he got to make his case, and that was enough. And so we attempted to have this decision judicially reviewed at the federal court, but unfortunately, Mr. Justice Shore dismissed leave. And what it means when leave is dismissed is you don't get any reasons why, and you just don't get a hearing. So we don't know why the federal court thought that Mr. Atkinson's decision was reasonable, that even though Jeremy's undeployable, he was going to be deployed, and that's fair, apparently. We don't know why, and there's nothing we can do about it. There's no further recourse beyond that. Jeremy and Ashley have since filed a PRA application and a humanitarian and compassionate grounds application, but they could receive a decision in either of those applications any day, and if they receive a negative PRA decision, they could be looking at a removal date as soon as 2 weeks after that decision. So accessing the courts in Canada hasn't provided the Brockways with any relief, and I think it's important for supporters of the Brockways and the other resistors to continue to engage in this active dialogue and put the issue out there so that their case can get attention. So basically, since 2006 and the federal court's first decision in Mr. Hinsman's case, the government has, in my opinion, been doing everything that it can to distract and avoid the real issue in the case, which is the illegality of the war, the egregious violations that are occurring on the ground in that conflict, and the moral choice that our resistors have made to come up and refuse to fight in that conflict. And while we're doing our best on the legal front to have these issues dealt with, it's sometimes harder to get directly to the point using the law, and it's much easier when you write a letter to your MP or write a letter to the editor to actually just talk about what's really underlying these cases, which is the illegality of the war in Iraq, the violations on the ground, and the moral choice that our resistors have made. So please do keep up your support and actively engage with this issue. And thank you very much for supporting the resistors, and keep it up.
For Rabble.ca, this is John Bonner. Thank you for listening to John Bonner's audio blog, hosted by Rabble.ca and the Rabble Podcast Network.